Hi, I'm David Herron. Welcome to the Wilton & Bain podcast series, Outside the Boardroom. In this series, we interview CEOs and leaders about their personal stories, helping to humanise the mythical art of leadership. I'm excited to share these stories as we unpack the motivations and drivers that have helped these amazing people to build their careers. In this episode, I'm joined by John Partilla. John Partilla is the CEO of Screen Vision Media, having spent over 25 years building his career as a senior executive across various private equity-backed firms within the media and advertising sector. John, you very kindly sent me a bio, and I'll spare your blushes, but I'm going to read it, if you don't mind.
Oh, David, thank you. But do the abbreviated versions. You know, when we're in this business too long, the bios get lengthier.
Here we go. Look, John Partilla has been CEO of Screen Vision Media, a premier cinema, digital video, and media organization since Jan 2016. He's led Screen Vision Media through successive record years of revenue and profit growth from 2016 to 2019. And under his leadership, he successfully navigated the company through the global pandemic challenges of 2020 to 2022, innovating and effectively positioning the company for future growth and vitality. John spent 30 plus years across the digital media and advertising sectors. And really today, I want to spend some time with John talking about his journey. We met back in 2019. We were introduced by a mutual friend from the private equity world. And we've kept in touch virtually for a period of that. And then physically, I think we caught up back in November in New York. So we always enjoy each other's company. And I'm sure we're going to have a great chat. So John, welcome. I'm looking forward to talking.
Thank you very much. So am I. With whatever value I may potentially offer, I'm glad to be here.
So, I mean, look, where do we start? I mean, I'm fascinated by your journey because I just love how much adversity you've had to kind of overcome. And, you know, everyone's world to a lesser or greater extent has been unsettled and picked apart by the pandemic, but none more than your sector, you know, kind of movies. So key to pick into that, but also to talk a bit about how you got here, where you came from and your career. So why don't I hand the mic to you and you can give me a bit of flavor.
Sure. Thank you, David. And thank you for having me on. Look, you focus in talent, right? And I continue to feel through all the years of the business that talent is the ultimate driver of any team's, organization's success. I was fortunate enough to start my career at Young & Rubicam back in the late 80s, where they had a very extensive talent-driven training program. I don't know if those things exist anymore. And that really created a launchpad for my career, where I spent almost 17 years at Y&R. And then I just had a range of wonderful experiences there throughout the years, client management and new business, et cetera. And then wanted to just kind of move to other seats of the table to broaden my learning. And so moved over to the media side, to Time Warner, as it was known, and wound up running some of their corporate sales and strategy development. From there, went further into media with Clear Channel, now known as iHeart. And then back to the agency side with Dentsu, and then ultimately kind of fell down the private equity rabbit hole, which I've been in the last 11 or so years. And I've worked now for three different private equity partners, all of them outstanding partners through different kinds of growth and stressful periods. But I think for me, the lessons early on in my career remain the same, which is find a good team, figure out how to best lead and develop that team, know when and where you have to be the leader, know when and where you are the supporter of one in the team's efforts, and relentlessly drive towards outcomes and growth in an environment where everyone actually has a decent time.
We're in similar boats in that we both lead private equity-backed businesses. And there's a few bits of our boats that are different. But one observation I make, because I interview and talk to lots of people who are, you know, in corporate land or, you know, aspire to be in private equity. And people say, I'd love to be a CEO in a private equity-backed business. And I sort of smirk to myself and think, well, you know, be careful what you wish for. So tell me about that. You had three different flavors. And obviously, as I've learned as my career's progressed, really, you know, there's always economic wins. And you can either think of them as headwinds or tailwinds. But the longer you do this, the more you just sort of tend to believe the wind's always swirling. So how have those three different experiences, how have they differed?
Well, it's a very interesting question, I think, David, because as I was sharing the arc of my career, what you may have picked up is that I started my career and for much of it stayed with the very large scale organizations, you know, Young & Rubicam, which then became part of WPP. They're really, I don't think there's anything larger in the advertising services sector. Into Time Warner, one of the leading media companies, into Clear Channel, the leading audio and now podcast company, over to Dentsu, another massive, large communications organization. And then moving into what you would call smaller ponds to become ultimately a bigger fish, because usually when you get those early leadership roles, you know, you usually wind up being in a smaller pond. I think the private equity model is perfect for those sort of smaller cap or mid-cap companies. I think the private equity model is also very, very appealing to those who really can hold themselves accountable to driving results and are willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that, you know, you achieve outcomes and success for the team and for the company. Those folks that are comfortable in those environments tend to do very well in the private equity construct. Those that are less comfortable with really owning the accountability probably do better in the large scale, more often bureaucratic organizations where it's not all fully on your shoulders.
Yeah, and it's that balancing act, isn't it, between going into a cycle with an investor where you're on the hook for a 5-year promise or plan or whatever it is, and then, you know, whatever those strategic goals of tomorrow are, the kind of tactical needs and weeds of today kind of continue to get in the way. So, you know, we were just talking offline, we've both just come out of board meetings, and I always leave those thinking, were we talking about the plan for 5 years from now? Were we talking about the weeds that we're in today? You know, I think having that ability to keep your eye on the prize, and when you know that something's worth fighting for, sticking your neck out, because it helps you deliver the promise of tomorrow, really. And in your world, nothing can have been more true given the economic challenges that you've been presented with.
Well, you know, yes, as we said, we were just chatting before about our board meetings, and it was nice, I think, for both of us, because I know you had your challenges as well, to be on firmer footing coming to the other side of this pandemic. You know, the pandemic, since you touched on it, was like nothing I'd ever experienced professionally. And I'll just say it very candidly. I've been through a reasonable amount of ups and downs and challenges in 30 plus years. Our company was performing well, 2015 through early 2020, as you just mentioned at the outset. And it wasn't an instance where we really saw the storm clouds gathering. Maybe for about 30 days, we were hearing rumblings of something that could really affect behaviors. And then we realized it was getting really quite serious. And I'll just cut to the chase. I think the reason this company and organization is still here today, we had an outstanding partnership with our private equity partner and still do today. But I was watching the Utah Jazz on a Thursday night. I think it was March 12th. And suddenly Rudy Gobert was, who plays for the Utah Jazz, for those of you who follow basketball in the US, it was announced he wouldn't be playing. He had tested positive for COVID, or he had just entered the game and had to be pulled out of the game. And the game was just canceled. The game stopped. And there was a moment there where, you know, I think I texted my private equity partners and they texted me back, and we realized this was going to be quite serious quite suddenly. At that moment, we scheduled a call for 7 a.m. the next morning. Within 30 days, we had significantly downsized the company, looked at our cash flows and what we thought we would need for the year ahead, created all kinds of scenario plannings and options through that conversation of how we would survive. And all that was just imagining that the COVID global pandemic would be maybe 12 to 18 months. It turned out to be closer to 3 years. And so I won't go into every gruesome detail, but it was a brutal period. And I think part of the reason we survived was the strength of the relationship and partnership we had with our private equity sponsor. And I think another big part of the reason was what we had to do, the terrible decisions we had to do, we did them quickly. So it wasn't just making difficult decisions, it was making them quickly. And so within 30 days, as I had said, we had made the difficult decisions that created the run rate for the company cash-wise, that if we'd made the same difficult decisions but waited 6 to 9 months to make them, I don't think we'd be sitting here today.
And John, one of the reasons that we called this podcast series Outside the Boardroom is because I'm intrigued by the sort of human side of leadership. And I know from personal experience, having gone through, you know, a slightly smaller downsizing. In fact, I was in Manhattan, I was in the middle of New York, heading to the airport. And, you know, I was reading the paper and looking at the news. And I thought, how the United States reacts to this is going to have a huge impact on how the rest of the world reacts to this. And by the time I got back to the UK the next morning, no one from Europe was allowed to fly into the States. And I remember literally the cab back home thinking, like you, that was a Friday. And I got on a call with my chair on the Saturday morning and I said, things are going to unravel here. We're going to have to make some decisions really quickly. But the point I was going to make in the observation, and I think often when you're not in a CEO role or you're not in a leadership role, you know, you can think from the outside that leaders of businesses are quite cold-hearted having to make all these decisions. How do you find that?
You know, it was one of the hardest experiences for my professional career. It was also very difficult personally. I often think that if you have to make reductions or make changes in an organization that are really the right thing for the organization, you know, you can do that with a clear conscience and you can move around people, you know, in different seats on the bus, et cetera, if need be. And it's also, I can do with a clear head, I think, the decisions that need to be made if someone is underperforming for a significant period of time where you've given them opportunities and chances. It's a terrible thing as a leader when you have to let people go because the company's not performing, but the individuals have been performing quite well. And that's when, you know, you're in a recession or where you've lost a big piece of a business. And that really sits on the leader's shoulders. And I haven't had to do that too much in my career because I think the blame should fall on the leader and the accountability for that. But in this case, it was none of the above. In this case, it was none of the above. The company was performing, the individuals performing, the organization was on the right path. And then we had an externality that nobody had experienced in this lifetime of a global pandemic. And we essentially took almost one out of two people out of the organization. So we were left with the organization just slightly 50% of the size that it was the month prior. And not a single person deserved that in the organization. But for the organization to survive, we had to make those decisions and figure out how we could survive with a much leaner base of talent. And it was just an awful period. All you could do was be incredibly human and let people vent and be there for them to recommend them to other opportunities and personally try to help place them into other organizations that weren't as damaged as our sector and our own company was, and try to be as human as we could throughout. The other thing I'll just say is, one of the great challenges of life is not sometimes just a period that can be very challenging, but it's the uncertainty when you're in a window like that. And so the pandemic gave us no time frame of when we knew we would be on the other side. So the uncertainty was just terrible. And I'll just say one final element, which is I found myself reading at night a fair amount of, you're an Englishman, but you know, Churchill. I was reading a book about the Shackleton story again, like how did leaders somehow motivate their teams, their organizations with humility, but with some degree of optimism through a dark period where there was no certainty. And it gave me some small amount of comfort in the evenings reading those books.
I like that. I like the analogy to Shackleton. And John, one of the other things, when we always laugh whenever we catch up, because we're both quite positive, upbeat people, and we normally find something to chuckle at. But you gave me a great analogy when we kept caught up in Manhattan. And by the way, I think I've stolen it because I've used it a lot of times. But repeat your analogy around the guy on holiday looking at the weather, because I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. So David had asked me, he said, well, my goodness, private equity partners can be quite exacting. And when you're in a period of this time where a company is challenged for this long, how have you maintained your role? And of course, I knock on wood and cross my fingers. I sit here having just come through a recent board meeting, but we continue to have a very trusting collaborative partnership, and a huge credit to the private equity group out of Boston. I won't name their name, but they're outstanding. The first 6 to 9 months, we were really in lockstep with each other. You know, the company had been performing. We're going to figure this out. As I said, we looked at headcount and cash flows, et cetera. But when it became clear this was going on and on and on, quarter by quarter by quarter, where, you know, if you remember in early 21, things were just beginning to recover. And then there was the Omicron virus. And it just was one challenge after another. And the slate titles kept being canceled or moved back. And so the business just kept having one challenge after another. And I remember one board member saying, well, I do appreciate how quickly you get out the bad news when a movie would move or something else would happen. He goes, but there certainly has been a great deal of it, hasn't it? I said, yes. The analogy I came up with was, at some point, the frustrations do build, right, with any partnership, and the private equity group can be no exception to that. At some point, it's a bit like taking your family on holiday. And, you know, you've planned for the week and you're excited for the week, and maybe you've got young kids in this particular scenario and your wife's excited as well, and you're picked a great place that you want to have a sunny holiday. And you get there on the first morning, you've got a week, and it rains. And then you get there on the second morning and check the television, you turn it on in the morning, and the local weatherman says it's going to be raining again today. Well, by the third or fourth day, if that weatherman every morning, while the children are climbing the walls, keeps announcing it's going to be raining the next day and the next day, the next day, you ultimately start screaming at the weatherman and venting at the weatherman, though you know it makes little sense. You know the weatherman didn't cause the rain, but you can't help, you have to vent on somebody. And there was a period of time, maybe by the time it was mid-22, where I think our private equity group, you know, was getting more frustrated, even though they knew that I wasn't causing the global pandemic, but they were more terse in their phone calls and their dialogue, because you just eventually have to be frustrated and take it out on somebody. And I became the weatherman for them.
Well, it's a much more humorous anecdote than shooting the messenger, right?
Yeah.
I love that. But you know, the fantastic thing, John, is through all of this adversity, first of all, we don't see each other that often, but you kept smiling. And second of all, you've got this business going back up the hill. So how has that been? And what do you think the really important lessons are that you've learned through coming up and out and through that adversity, really?
Yeah, well, to be a good leader, I think you have to have a blend of positivity and optimism. But also, as we know by now, anybody who survives in the business world for any period of time, it has to be pragmatic. But it's far easier, right, to be the glass half empty person most of the time. If Shackleton had said, for instance, well, we're just not going to get out of this, I don't see a way. Well, then was everybody just lie down and that's it, give up and die? I mean, that's so you have to look for the signals where you can give some data and affirmation to your investors and your employee base and the teams around you and your investors that you think there's a way out of this, if you believe it. But if you do, and if the data supports it, then you have to really be a positive storyteller of how that's going to happen. And for us, some things were happening in our business quite quickly that led us to hope if we could survive to the other side. The first was that while our business, which is cinema advertising, by the way, Screen Vision, as movie titles were being pushed back, it was becoming increasingly apparent that the economics weren't better when studios did that. And so very quickly, within 6 months or so, the big studios, Disney and NBC Universal, et cetera, realized that they knew about your exclusive theatrical windowing before they would then put their product to downstream windows. That learning, that question asked and answered, was a wonderful reinforcement of the theatrical windowing model and was core to our business future success. And then there was streaming. And people learned very quickly that while people had a great appetite to watch streaming at home during a pandemic, and that would continue, they wanted to complement that behavior with sharing those communal experiences of movie going, much as someone who's an avid sports watcher at home also enjoys going to live sport, or someone who listens to a good deal of maybe Spotify streaming at home likes to go to live music concerts during the year. So it quickly became apparent that communal behaviors were just as relevant as ever. And I won't go into every element, but we could see the jigsaw puzzle pieces of our business coming back together until ultimately we had to realize that if we can just survive this and get back our performance of selling ad revenue, you know, in the pre-show before the movies begin, we would have a healthy business again. And then, of course, as we've talked about, we had a much reduced or streamlined business model. So the economic flow through at lower revenue would result in very good profit capture. So we really could see a way through this. So then the key was maintaining the talent here with the organization and finding a way to have people believe that narrative that we were believing at the leadership levels.
Amazing. And, you know, again, we were talking about this last week because I think we both went to watch the Bob Marley movie in the last week or two. But, you know, the cinema when I went there Monday night in London was full. So more movies coming out. It's good news. You think there's light at the end of this tunnel?
We do. And in fact, this past summer of 2023, the summer season, which is a big measure, a big barometer of how the cinema advertising does, it was 92% of the eyeballs of the summer of 2019 with the Barbenheimer effect and a number of other very good titles. And we saw the performance of 2023 overall be approximately 80% of what it was in 2019 of tickets purchased. And so this year continues to have some chop and challenges with the actor strikes that we experienced mid-year of last year. But people are predicting 2025 to get back to 85 to 90% of the 2019 box office. And so if I can sit here right here this morning, David, and say, in about 10 months, our business will be about 90% of what it was in terms of eyeballs and admissions of 2019 pre-pandemic, I don't know that any of us thought we could be saying that in the summer of 2020. So that's somewhat nothing short of miraculous.
It's amazing. I mean, we used this analogy, didn't we, when we talked the other day. I said to you, look, I think by the middle or end of 2025, we'll be back where we were in the middle of 2022. So a long time to get back to where you started. But when you look at that whole journey, you think, wow, you know, we've really overcome some stuff here. I was just reading as I was talking and I was fascinated by this. So I'm going to go back to your bio and I'm not going to read any more of it. I'm going to ad lib a little bit. But one of the things you say there is you've gleaned inspiration from some of the leadership wisdom from some major movies, some of which are my favorite movies, by the way, John. One of my favorite movies of all time is Moneyball.
Yes.
So given what you just talked about with regards to talent and building teams, and how have you, particularly, I guess, in a time when business has been tough, how have you sort of embraced that sort of Moneyball mentality?
I was so surprised when Moneyball came out because it's made my now all-time top 10 movie list. The acting was fantastic, Brad Pitt and many others in there, but I wasn't aware of the story before I'd read the book and then the movie. And really, it's about thinking differently, right? Which is obviously Steve Jobs' famous quote. And when you go into a business, particularly in a private equity model, there's a belief that the business can be somehow accelerated, juiced, strengthened, and creativity and talent are the biggest part of those pieces. Because if you're just going to do things the same way, but increase pricing, or do things the same way, make people work harder, that will get you part of the way there, but it won't get you very far. It's really about getting people in a room that are on the team or your suppliers or your customers and saying, what can we do differently for you? What can we do better for you? What are the needs? Where are you challenged? And the story starts to come together. You'll see the answers being out there, much the way Brad Pitt was in the room and saying, do we need this or do we need two infielders that make up for a better hitter? And for us, a lot of it was also around our pricing and yield. We wound up decreasing the value of our pricing in our pre-show, where when people came in earlier to the movie and increased the pricing closer to when the movie trailers began, and lots of things we did beyond that, strengthening the creativity of the pre-show and just looking at everything with fresh eyes. And if you do that, you won't solve every challenge, but you'll suddenly say, wait a minute, we've completely transformed or reinvented some of this business. And that's where you get the big growth jumps. And that's what private equity really loves. And then you can go to the private equity partner. You can also say, look, this is a bit different, but if we invest here, here, and here, and we streamline costs here, here, and here, which is an offset, which they love to hear, this business will tremendously grow. And then you can back it up. Those kinds of flat structures go a long, long way. So the business you're in, I just have to end where I began, which is talent is the biggest part of driving that kind of change and transformation.
John, this has been great. I always enjoy catching up. And just to add with the fact that when we spoke a week ago, you told me that when you were growing up in New York, you always remembered the sky being blue. And yes. I said that I always think of the sky in New York as being blue. And looking through your window, the sky in New York today is blue.
Yes,
it's not
it is.
Blue in London. It's grey and dreary. So I think that's a sign. So look, well done. I always enjoy speaking to you. It's been a great journey. I appreciate your time and good luck with what's to come next.
David, you're outstanding, I must say, Mr. Heron. And man, the sky should be blue because we both finished board meetings this week. So perhaps in just a few hours, your skies will get bluer outside of London. But I can't wait to see you again. You really concentrate on the business that matters most, which are the people. So thank you.
Take care. Cheers, John.
Cheers.